everyone, and welcome back to the Rural Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Albrecht with Egg Country Farm Credit Services. To this point, our podcast has focused heavily on agriculture, but today we want to feature a topic that is important to all life in rural areas, and that's healthcare. Joining us today is Nathan Blod, CEO of the Renville County Hospital and Clinics in Olivia, Minnesota. Welcome to the program, Nathan.
Hi, Adam.
Because healthcare is such a large and encompassing topic, let's start with a more broad question to get us started. What is your take on the state of rural healthcare today?
Well, I think first and foremost, there's a lot of passion for rural healthcare. We have a lot of quality providers, especially in the west central Minnesota region, just doing great work, providing phenomenal care to folks. But there is some concern as we look to the future. The high cost of deductibles continue to rise. People are wondering, you know, what's the long-term solution to stem the rising costs of healthcare? They're looking towards Washington to try and see what does that crystal ball look like? Are we going to have the Affordable Care Act or some new variation in the future? And basically, when you're spending almost 19% of your gross domestic product on healthcare, I think we all know that that's not sustainable for the long run, because to have a sustainable economy, you have to focus on manufacturing and service growth. So we do know that the cost needs to come down, yet at the same time, as an industry, we need to be working on providing the best quality and the best access for healthcare. And that's really the triple aim of healthcare, is to lower the cost, improve the quality, and the overall health of a population. At the same time, we have to focus on our providers, the retention of our providers, because provider burnout amongst physicians, I know we all feel burnt out once in a while, but is far more prevalent amongst medical professionals. And because of all the demands, the changes we've made on them in the last few years. So we have to be cognizant of that as well and make sure that we take care of our providers so they can take care of us. So there's a lot of pieces. I mean, healthcare is a complicated animal, but we need to continue to strive to try and make it work as best we can for everyone.
Now, that's a good segue into my next question, and you've already listed a few things, a few challenges that are out there, but what would you say are some of your bigger pieces and your biggest challenges of administering quality health care out here in rural areas?
Yeah, as a rural provider, certainly access to human capital. So having not only, as you know, there's may not know, there's projected shortages for physicians and advanced practice providers like nurse practitioners and physician assistants. So as an industry, we're going to have to learn how to better utilize the resources that we have available. Some of that will be bridged through technology. We're looking at adding e-visits at our facility, and we've already incorporated telemedicine to help bridge that gap. But in the same respect, we still need to hire as well radiology techs, maintenance staff, nurses. And what we're seeing in rural America is we're seeing a definite shortage across the board in all healthcare positions. As an industry, we need to promote healthcare to our youth in the schools. We need to help support residency programs, help support on-the-job training for staff out here, because without the people, we can't serve the population.
According to the Minnesota Rural Health Association, there's one physician for every 965 people in the metro areas. In outstate, that ratio changes to one per every 2,715 people. That's quite a spread. Does this speak to the need for more health professionals in rural areas?
Absolutely, Adam. That's a fantastic statistic, and it does speak of the disparity that we're seeing amongst rural and urban areas. And that's why we need the residency programs to understand that, to open up slots. Certainly, the talk of a new medical school in Arlington would be a huge boost to Minnesota, and they're looking at adding that as a rural component, a rural training component. But without a doubt, the shortage of physicians will be felt in rural Americas, which is why we're going to have to use technology and new care models like patient-centered home models. We implement coordinated care models here so we can use RNs and other medical professionals at the top of their license.
Are there any reasons that you're hearing as to why job seekers just aren't coming out here
Well, I mean, first off, competition is fierce across the country, right? So as we talked, there's a predicted shortfall and current shortfall of physicians just across the country. So they're predominantly going to move to the urban areas first. So that shortfall is hurting us. But it is more difficult to attract talent. The physicians and some of the other healthcare workers that we've been able to recruit are people that grew up in these areas. So the way we look at it from our board perspective and our physician perspective is we need to be developing that next level of leader, that next level of physician, homegrown, if you will. And that would be the best way that we could help ensure that there's people that will be taking care of myself or you 20 years down the road. I think that's really the only way to help stem the tide of physician loss.
Demographics are obviously changing, and of course it depends on the area you're in. But on average, like farmers, many rural areas are getting older. How do changing demographics play into today's healthcare?
We're seeing an overall increase with the baby boomer population aging. We're seeing an overall increase in the prevalence of multiple chronic conditions, diabetes, conditions of that nature. That's requiring a lot more chronic care management. Now, the nice thing is in the last few years, Medicare has made accommodations to help pay for that, which is important to primary care that you have in the rural areas, because before it was difficult to have enough income to justify the cost of care and everything that goes into it. Now we actually get paid to help hire RNs, put IT infrastructure in to help manage that unique population that's a very independent population, but also is aging and is getting in the time frame where they're seeing multiple conditions. They might be on multiple pharmaceuticals. So there's a lot of management with that population, but it's our job to make sure that we can keep them as healthy as we can.
How do you plan for the future given these changing demographics and potential shortages among workers?
From our standpoint, we touched a little bit earlier on technology. I think technology is one of the best ways to bridge that gap. But to foster technology, you have to have collaborations. So I know we focused on collaborations with our partners and other healthcare systems around us because they sometimes have access to technology. They also have access to a specialist. In fact, we joined the Central Minnesota Health Network, which is the segue to an accountable care organization with West Central and Central Minnesota partners. So what we're seeing is a convergence of care where you used to have entities that competed against one another. Now we're much more freely sharing information and resources to help take care of a region of patients. It's really an interesting time, and it's a shift in thinking, but it's very much a grassroots rural type of approach to healthcare where you're working together to try and make something better.
And again, that's another perfect segue into talking about telemedicine. When you think about the evolution of the delivery of healthcare, it's hard not to also think of the rapid advances in technology. How are concepts like telemedicine impacting the way care is delivered here in rural areas?
Yeah, great question. I think one of the most startling revelations for us was just in putting in our telestroke program. The ability of having that neurologist at a moment's notice when somebody out on a rural farm is coming in, we know they have stroke symptoms, to be able to give them the proper care immediately, and not only from the neurologist, but the radiologist. I mean, high-speed networks, broadband infrastructure, we're able to make diagnoses in just such a short amount of time. And of course, if you're having a stroke, it's all about time in the care plan. And we've seen incredible advances from the way it used to be, quote unquote, several years ago before the advent of telehealth. Also, we're looking at moving into e-visits. That's part of a bigger partnership. Our new, more on-demand society, definitely that appeals to them. I know I would use it, and our physicians are already using MyChart, communicating with their patients. This would just be another tool in their toolbox to help them efficiently and affordably address people's needs.
What has been the feedback from those who have utilized in terms of, have you heard from customers or patients, I should say?
Yeah.
What's their feedback been on this system where at one point they would have probably had to travel to the Twin Cities?
Yeah. So our telecardiology program partnership with Minneapolis Heart through Allina is a prime example of that. So that was set up, I think, and went live in late 2013. We were one of the first telecardiology sites in Minnesota. And we were worried. We were kind of concerned that people would be a little put off. But you know, as we've all become more technologically advanced and we learn how to Skype with our grandkids and our friends and our associates, it's really become commonplace, just like this podcast. It's part of everyday life. And the surveys that we get back from our patients that use telecardiology, they do not see the telecardiology platform as a barrier at all. It's truly quite remarkable. Technological adoption is moving at a rapid pace in this country, and used properly, it could be a good thing.
Now, of course, you mentioned broadband, but how does access to broadband or lack thereof affect the way telemedicine is working out in rural areas?
Access to high-speed broadband is the cornerstone of any success in modern medicine, not just from a telehealth perspective, but let's say, for instance, we're analyzing, looking at putting in 3D tomography imaging for breast health. Tomography requires multiple images all compressed into a file. Those files are huge. You need to be able to have the connections point to point down to the cities to be able to send that information in, you know, millisecond speed, not 10 minutes of a download. And there's still a need out there. You know, Renville County's done a great job. Our commissioners have had great vision to help install broadband. They've been great supporters, but there's just a need to continue to build that out to our homes. I'm a believer. I grew up on a farm between Hector and Fairfax. I'm a believer that everybody should have access to high-speed broadband. And certainly there's great leadership and vision from our county commissioners to try and make that happen.
Beyond telemedicine, are there any other creative ways rural health systems are serving patients?
Yes, beyond telemedicine, there are several ways we are serving. I think the one thing that in a rural setting we do better than anybody is we know our patients. We care for our patients. I know people in healthcare say they care about their patients, but I know our folks, they just empathize. That's their friends, their families. They take care of them as if they're own. In fact, that is our motto. When we bring in a service or we ask ourselves, are we doing as good as we can? We say, is this the level of service you would provide for your mother, your sister, your brother? We ask ourselves that continuously, because if we don't feel we are, then we make improvements. And I think that level of passion and dedication and really serving the needs of your community and not the needs of yourself is why people are working here. And I think that spirit of we're going to figure out how to just make it work and we're going to improve it is very inherent to the rural nature, the rural lifestyle.
Again, we're speaking with Nathan Blod, CEO of the Renville County Hospital and Clinics. We've heard a lot about the rise of opioid abuse. Is this a concern among rural hospitals as well?
Absolutely, Adam. In fact, our public health director, Jill Bruns, is pulling together a task force that our physicians will be part of and Sheriff Scott Abel would be part of to be able to look at ways that we could interpret this, share information, and address the situation as best as we can. We've definitely seen a rise at our facility in opioid addiction. It's as big of a problem as everybody sees in the news, and it can affect anyone. I'm very proud of our physicians. We always check registries as best we can, and for years we've had a pain doctor with pain contracts so that we've tried to help that population move away from opioids. Our physicians really try not to prescribe opioids as much as possible. In fact, we're using far less opioids even in our surgical procedures with the advent of our new robotic surgery with Dr. Slater. So it's definitely a problem. We see people come in. There's a lot of great work being done around that at the Minnesota Hospital Association and at our local levels. And I'm excited to start working with our local folks on that issue.
It would be hard to have a conversation about healthcare without discussing health insurance.
Yeah.
The Affordable Care Act brought change after its implementation. What have been your observations since the law went into effect?
The best part of the Affordable Care Act is that they help find coverage for millions of Americans that did not have coverage. Without a doubt, that's part of humanity, is to help those people have coverage. It's certainly, we saw our delinquent payments go down dramatically as the coverage for people that didn't have it went up. In the same respects, people ask me, is it good? Is it bad? What do you think? Well, it's a little bit of both, right? I think that's why we've had the political dialogue that we've had. Certainly, our leaders are trying to improve upon it. I know there's different versions, but if we could keep people covered, yet at the same time stem the rise, the cost increase in health insurance, which we already discussed needs to happen, we would start gaining some ground. And I think there's real work being done around that. I know in our ACO and in our ARCH program with our Medicare and Medicaid patients, we're looking at cost utilization. We're trying to understand how can we serve these people better without necessarily ordering this test and that test, but still practice good, sound, and defensible medicine to have good quality outcomes. It definitely takes a partnership. It's not all one-sided. We as patients need to do our part to have a healthier lifestyle. And if we're on a med, let's stay and adhere to the med, because it's going to take all of us to solve this problem.
Farmers tend to get their coverage on the individual market, but the individual market has witnessed large premium hikes. What can be done to help those facing these increasing rates?
It's going to take some legislative fixes, right? I mean, that's number one. I think you're going to see some narrow network plan options, you know, to lower the cost. Usually narrow network plans where you're working within a system instead of having a plan that's open to go anywhere will definitely help stem the tide of rising healthcare costs. But competition is probably one of the best ways to foster lower premium prices. And certainly our local lawmakers, I know Tim Miller and others, really fought for the ability for cooperatives to sell health insurance. Hats off to them. They created another market within a market. And I think you're going to see continued movement, continued options. And, you know, the other thing is, I truly believe, and maybe this is personal, but from everything I read, there are going to be some technologies out there that are going to help lower the cost eventually of healthcare. There's going to be some genomic breakthroughs, very tailored medicine. And as those costs start to come down for those new technologies, you're going to see some great advances. And I'm overly optimistic, but we can't keep paying out the premiums we're paying. And I'm hopeful that technology and all the good work we're doing to try and control our costs for a region will come to bear fruit.
Data shows that rural areas have a higher rate of people that utilize programs such as Medicare and Medicaid. But reimbursement rates for such programs often pay below the cost. Many hospitals are not-for-profit, but some type of revenue is still needed to cover the operational costs. How does this reality factor into operating a rural hospital or clinic?
Yeah, one of the keys to our success as a hospital is we're what's known as a critical access hospital. So we have a specific designation that creates a safety net for our hospital. Is it an opportunity to have a huge influx of revenue? Absolutely not. Does it help keep you in business? Absolutely. Also, our clinics are what's known as rural health clinics. Certainly that helps. There's a cost-based subsidy to that. The overall percentage of that for rural health care as part of the budget is minuscule, because the majority of the costs are tied to end-of-life care and they're centered around suburban areas. So, you know, I think there's approximately 600, the last time I looked, critical access hospitals in the U.S. Almost the majority of them are in rural areas. And it is critically important that we help support our lawmakers, that we focus and make sure that we maintain that access through critical access hospitals and rural health clinics. Because without that, I think we could see some constriction in patient access and having to drive quite a ways to get care.
Now, you think of everything that we've talked about today. What would you say is the future, or how do you see the future of medicine and delivering healthcare out here in rural areas?
Yeah, I think, Adam, we spoke before, technology is going to be one of the leading ways. So having access, whether it's a wireless network, you know, broadband network, it's critical that we have the infrastructure to support technology. We're going to be seeing virtual visits. We're going to have at-home devices that'll connect with our computer, that'll help monitor patient outcomes and clinical performance. But you're still going to need the bricks and the mortar for certain services, whether it's surgery, having an emergency room. You know, people are still going to need to be in a patient bed once in a while. Babies are still going to be delivered. And you have to be available to offer those services. And there's some things that you just can't do virtually yet. And so I think that use leveraging technology, being in tune with your legislators to make sure that we protect what base we've built over the years, and then trying to recruit and retain physicians and other healthcare workers. Those are the three keys to making sure that we can continue to serve our rural population.
Now, there are so many other aspects within healthcare that we haven't discussed, but do you have any additional parting thoughts on what you would like to share with those listening along?
Yeah, I think it's just individuals, and I'm no different. We've all been faced with higher and higher premiums, higher and higher deductibles. I truly do believe there's a light as we look out at the end of the tunnel. It may take a little while and a little more time to get there, but there is an exhaustive body of work going on behind the scenes right now to stem the tide of healthcare spending. Conversations that would never have been had 10 or 15 years ago. We are in a transformational age of healthcare. At our facility, we talk about it with all of our employees. And, you know, it used to be when you'd bring up change, people would run the other direction. Nowadays, they just ask, what can we do to help that change? And that's where we need to be to get healthcare back on track to make it a supportive service and not the cornerstone of our economy.
Thanks for spending some time with us, Nathan. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Adam.
That is Nathan Blod, CEO of the Renville County Hospital and Clinics. That's a wrap for this episode of the Rural Perspectives Podcast, which is a production of Ag Country Farm Credit Services. To get more great content, please visit www.agcountry.com.